Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Hi, everyone. I'm Vincent Joe.
Hi, I'm Kathy Reed.
And I'm Allison Reed.
Hi, I'm Ashley.
Hi, I'm Grace.
We're from the Haydenettes.
I am Mark Henretti.
Ciao a tutti, siamo Rebecca Ghirardi.
E Filippo Ambrosini.
E vi diamo il benvenuto a
This Weekend Skating.
Welcome to This Week in Skating, the weekly podcast bringing you the latest news from the world of figure skating. Here are your hosts, Daphne, Gina, and Matteo.
Welcome to another edition of This Week in Skating. We are doing an interview today.
On August 7th, during a reallocation ceremony at the Paris Olympics, Team USA and Team Japan received their long-awaited Olympic medals from the team event at the 2022 Olympics in Beijing.
During those 2.5 years, we were honored to have one of the members of Team USA come on This Week in Skating to talk with us openly about the medal situation and the importance of clean sport.
So when we saw him finally receive his Olympic gold medal after more than 900 days of waiting, we couldn't wait to welcome back him to This Week in Skating. So we want to welcome Olympic champion Vincent Joe back to This Week in Skating. Hey, Vincent!
Yay! Hey, Daphne and Gina. So good to be back with you guys.
Yeah.
We're so excited to have you back. A lot has changed since we had you on. I think it was about 6 months ago, it seems like. I think it's been about six months.
A lot has changed, but it almost feels like yesterday.
It definitely does.
Well, I want to ask first question. Where is that Olympic gold medal?
I anticipated that question, so I've got it right here.
It's in a beautiful box.
I'll take it out. I'll take it out and show it to you. My mom was actually preparing to pack it up so that no grubby little hands would ever touch it again. But I gotta bring it out one more time. So.
Oh, there it is.
Look at that. Oh my goodness.
Did it feel heavier in person than you thought? Or
it is very heavy. It's about 1.5 pounds.
Cause it looks very thick.
Yeah, it is very thick. It's like when it drops into your hands, you have to absorb the recoil a little.
Now, does it say like the Olympic figure skating team event on it?
Yes, it says figure skating team event down here. The front says the 24th Olympic Winter Games Beijing 2022 with the 5 rings, and then the back says Beijing 2022. And then it has some Chinese letters on it, which, you know, my Chinese has kind of fallen off over the years. But I think it says Beijing 2022, Niandai 24. I gotta get better at that. But yeah, actually, I have to be extra careful with it because I think the metal is quite soft, so it chips easily. I know that some people had accidentally clanked their metal against the glass water bottles like they have in Europe, because, you know, they don't do plastic water bottles in Europe. And the edge of the metal just chipped a little bit from that. So I really have to be extra careful with it.
Sounds like they're quite delicate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe my mom's right to be cautious, but I also have a bunch of friends at college who asked to see it. Yeah. So, oh boy.
Yeah. How did you get it home from Paris? Did you have to be like through security extra careful how you took care of it and all of that?
I just surrounded it with layers and layers of clothes in a suitcase. So,
oh my gosh. Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, college kid and delicate object sounds like a disaster. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm sure that you'll do the very best that you can. You waited a long time to get your hands on that. But you also don't want to just pack it away because you gotta celebrate.
Yeah, I don't want to just pack it away. I want to at least, you know, like put it up on a wall or something.
You gotta celebrate it.
I remember hearing Olympians like sleep with their own medal and everything too.
I don't know about that. I would not let it get to my head, but it's definitely representative of a long journey and a difficult uphill battle. So it means a lot to me.
Gina and I were not in Paris. However, we arranged for a few friends of ours. We gathered on Zoom and we each watched our own Peacock streaming. And to see you all when you first were walking out, what was it like being there in the moment?
It felt Olympic. That's really the best word to describe it. It was at the foot of the Eiffel Tower. There was a full audience. I didn't know how the audience would receive us. I thought maybe a lot of them would be confused because, you know, like, what are, you know, figure skaters doing at the Summer Olympics? But the announcers did a great job. You know, kind of giving the context and sort of hyping everyone up. So, and then there was great spirit from the audience members, you know, people chanting USA, USA, and people like actual skating fans screaming skaters' names for, you know, both Japan and the US alike. So it was really heartwarming. We didn't get that in Beijing. So it was really great to experience that one more time. And, you know, furthermore, you guys may remember that they actually had me as the first skater walking out.
We did. We noticed.
And it felt almost metaphorical in a sense, for, you know, many times it felt like I had to be leading the charge in terms of daring to speak about, you know, deserving about these, you know, clean athletes deserving justice. And so, you know, being at the front of the line is always scary and you don't exactly know how to step, how fast to walk, which direction to turn, when to turn, you know, but at the end, you know, when it's all said and done, it was really exhilarating. And so, yeah, you know, walking out there, and being in front of the rest of the team almost felt a little bit metaphorical. But it was overall, it was an incredible experience and really happy to have shared that with all my teammates because we went through so much together. We competed through multiple Olympic cycles together, which is uncommon. Usually there's churn in the team between years. Some people retire, there's new members, but this team was pretty much the same between 2018 and 2022. And it was just really special. So
now, when did you find out you guys were going to Paris? Because I think I've heard something like just a few days before you got on a plane.
Yeah, literally a few days before. And it was like, it was a huge roller coaster. We didn't think it was going to happen because a few days before they had extended the deadline to sort of resolve the appeals to August 12th. And the last day of the Olympics was August 11th. And knowing how things have been in the past, wasn't likely they were going to get it done by August 12th. So it almost felt like they were trying to send us a message like, hey, like, forget it. It's not going to happen at this Olympics. So we had started having internal discussions on, is it going to be a sort of pass and wait for Milan angle, or is it going to be a try to go for a celebration in Paris anyway, medal or no medal? But then people were saying, oh, that might make the IOC unhappy because the IOC originally was going to pay for our flights and everything. But if we went anyway in Paris, then the USOPC would have to cover our flights, and the IOC wanted just one celebration, one, you know, proper celebration for everyone. And if we went in Paris, it would feel almost like disrespecting that. So you know, we weren't really sure what to do. And I was prepared to just not go. I think everyone was prepared for that outcome. And then, you know, 2 days later, we got the announcement in the morning that they dismissed the appeals. And I was at work at my summer internship in an office building in New York City. And I was sitting there with my button up and slacks on in a quiet office, unable to, you know, react. So I was just sitting there freaking out, like in a completely silent office, unable to say anything. But no, it was great. We found out a few days before, got packed really quickly. And you know, I'd already been communicating beforehand with them that, like, you know, we need the team behind the team there. Like, it's just as much a gold medal for them as it is for the athletes. And in the end, we were able to get much of the team out. Parents were able to go. So, you know, my mom, dad, and sister went. It was great.
That's definitely different from what you would have seen in Beijing, because there no family was there. It was very, well, you know, firsthand, it's incredibly isolating not having family there, but then being further isolated with COVID. I think you got to be part of something very special in having this ceremony at an Olympics in front of the Eiffel Tower with your family there. It's
almost like a blessing in disguise. I mean there's, like, it's either way it played out, you could find stuff to complain about, but you know, I don't like to think that way. I think it's just there's the yin and the yang in everything. And there's always something to learn from, always something to do better in. And I think this whole crazy chain of events should serve as a lesson to hopefully all parties involved that, you know, this is not normal. We should not have to deal with stuff like this. Like, you know, overhaul the anti-doping procedures and, you know, whatever is wrong with testing that athletes aren't being caught, like, you know, maybe we got to put more money into R&D. Maybe we got to ensure accountability at various levels of the organizations. You know, I'm not, like, I don't know exactly what the root of the problem is, but, well, I know what the root of the problem is, people who are doing it. But aside from that... Aside from that, you know,
there has to be a better way to catch the doping and prevent it.
Well, and I'm sure the proper rules are in place. It's just how it's the people that are put there to enforce them and the method in which they're being enforced. And as is the case in a lot of real world legal cases, even if the rules are broken, sometimes they're not just simply not prosecuted or swept under the rug or something. So, you know, there's a lot of accountability to be taken that's not currently being taken. So
it's easy for people to say, oh, well, people will always be doing it. It's always going to happen. Well, we need to make it the norm that it's not happening. And we need to make it the norm that if it is happening and it's caught, that it's taken care of, it's prosecuted, it's shut down with a firm hand, not a hand slap. It's got to be, yeah. It's got to be stopped. And the only way to do that is to be consistent, to follow the rules, yeah. to interpret the rules and execute the punishment the same way, no matter who it is.
Yeah. You had the 2014 Sochi scandal, and you know, we all know about mm-hmm. this. We've talked about this, but you know, it's to reiterate, you know, the punishment they received was to, for everything to remain the same, just change the three letters in front of the athlete's name. But everyone knows, like they win their medals and they still go home and you know, nothing changes. And everyone knows that they represent Russia. Their whole support team is there. It's really not a repercussion at all.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It has to be more severe. It's got to be a punishment.
It's not like the infraction was mild. This was a you know, countrywide level violation, egregious violation of, you know, and a rule that, you know, really doesn't have any gray area.
No, it doesn't. And I also think about the long-term effects of doping on a young skater's yeah. body, not only for the infraction of doping, but for the fact that in 15 or 20 years, that effect could be debilitating because you just don't know. And I'm scared for those mm-hmm. athletes.
Yeah, I mean, there's got to be so many long-term side effects associated with putting young children on a mishmash of various drugs, starting at age 5 to 7. Those are the numbers that you know, that I've heard. It's terrifying.
It's crazy to even think about that. As soon as you threw those numbers out there,
I started skating at age 5. I didn't even know what the world championships were. I didn't even know what a single axel was at age 5. At age 7, I didn't even know yet if I wanted to do skating or soccer or piano or swimming or whatever. But, you know, you've got these children that are taken advantage of in a system that just, you know, treats them like machines and then discards them when they're fully depreciated. And because they're, you know, fed so much unnatural stuff and put through so much abuse, they quote unquote depreciate pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so rare to see, a Russian skater that a Russian, women's skater that makes it past, you know, 16 or 17.
That's become the norm, like career mm-hmm. ending, maybe at the latest 18, but usually 16, 17. And by then there's already someone coming up because you can mm-hmm. see it. If you follow junior or even novice international, you can see them coming. Like, it's like an assembly line, and kids shouldn't be treated like that. Yeah. It's not okay.
Yeah, and I think what the ISU did or the IOC with raising the age to 17 was good. Good for longevity in the sport. But when you look at it through the lens of doping in Russia, it almost feels like putting a bandage on the wound, because what's stopping them from just keeping the girls on their drug programs for another 2 years? And they just they have their year of glory when they're 17, and then you know, they're told to, you know, make room for the next rising star.
That's kind of how it is. I remember, I think it was 2018 when Zagitova won the gold medal, and Medvedeva had been this strong competitor mm-hmm. all the way through until just at that last year. It's It was hard mm-hmm. based on some of the articles that I've read, that you're the chosen one until you're not.
Mm-hmm.
And it can happen at any time. Yep. And to me, that's incredibly sad. And what prepares kids for that quick of a turnaround that, you know, 1 minute you're adored and appreciated, the next minute somebody else is taking your place and you're on the side. It's very disheartening.
And furthermore, skating is a sport where it's easier to justify sort of playing with rankings like that, because scoring is kind of difficult to understand. It's not just, you know, who jumped higher, or who reached the finish line first.
There's such a subjective component to it. I was explaining this to a couple of friends because we were talking about gymnastics. And I was just explaining, you know, some of it in a sport like this, that's subjective, there's that element in it, and you can't, you know, it's not easy to explain to people why it is the way it is. Yeah. And figure skating is similar. Yeah.
And it's interesting because if you think of this Zagitova versus Medvedeva comparison that we're talking about here, they both had, you know, they both didn't do quads, triple axels. Their base values, if you don't factor in the second half bonus, should be, you know, pretty much identical. Like if they're competing on any given day, it's just a toss up, a coin flip as to who would win. But then you have Zagitova putting all the jumps in the second half. So then you get like maybe a point or two bonus there. But the thing is that bonus should have been negated by the component score. And this is because not necessarily general component score. You can argue however you want there, but one of the five component factors is composition. And to receive high composition marks, you need a balanced program layout. And Zagitova's program layout was absolutely not balanced. She did both step sequences and the spins in the first half of the program and just kind of floated around the rink. And the second half just went boom, 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 boom with the jumps. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't balanced at all. So judges should not have had grounds to give her higher than, I mean, I don't know exactly what the mark is, but based on the benchmarks for the other factors, it shouldn't have been higher than a 9, which I don't exact off the top of my head, I don't know how the math factors out, but that should negate the point bonus that she gets from the second half bonus for all the jumps. And, you know, in terms of performance qualities, I mean, that's also pretty subjective. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say that personally, I feel like Medvedeva should have won. But as we've learned from 2014 and probably most major competitions after, judges play favorites. There's no denying that. And even in less obvious cases, there's probably still something going on. Even in competitions where it doesn't seem like something's going on, there probably still is something going on. And I don't think the problem is necessarily with the rule book. I think the rule book is fine. The problem lies with the people that are actually, you know, enforcing the rule book.
Yeah.
So,
and that may be a good place to start.
Right.
I've had to explain this to a few people before, and I know Gina and I've talked about this on the podcast as well, that the Russians are not in competition now. And it's not because of doping. It's because of a war. So
if
they are allowed to come back, there's still the doping that needs to be addressed.
I think I said this last time, but it's kind of ridiculous because more people need to hear this. It's kind of ridiculous that it took a whole war to ban them and not decades of state-sponsored doping. Like, it's pretty ridiculous. And I've heard people talking about them being allowed back in the 2026 Olympics, which is kind of scary because if you look at their men now, their boys too, they're exhibiting the same trends that we saw in the girls, that we now know are doping. These little 11-year-old little children doing multiple quads and hitting them with a 100%, you know, success rate in some competitions, and hitting them back to back to back, and making them look easy on top of that. Like if that were possible naturally, you'd think that it wouldn't be limited to just one country, because if you look at just the raw technique underneath the jumps, I think the Japanese have the best technique in the world. And so you'd think maybe the Japanese or someone from the US or some prodigy from some other country might have also figured out how to do a quad at age 11, but no. And then all of a sudden you've got like 100 of them in Russia doing that. Like the math doesn't math.
Yeah.
The statistics don't make sense.
And again, it's not just the doping effect on the body, it's the continued pounding of the jump so much that I just worry about these kids turning 30 and just
being able to move or being able to, you know, do anything.
Yeah. I mean, I had surgery at age 12 for a 2-centimeter tear in my lateral meniscus, and that was from triples. I had 3 stress fractures in my right foot at age 9, and that was from doubles. Granted, I probably overdid a lot of things. My coaches when I was young would actively try to stop me from jumping, because I would just go and go and go. But that was doubles. They're doing this with quads at the same age, triples and quads at the same age. It is very scary. Yeah. Putting results and glory separate from integrity ahead of well-being is a great recipe for long-term disaster. You might see short-term success, but you know, these individuals' bodies and minds won't last.
It sets this expectation of perfection. Mm-hmm. And what do you do if you're an athlete and you're tossed aside and you have to suddenly deal with, oh, I'm not perfect, and the mental health aspect of it as well.
Mm-hmm. Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job or your deodorant or your lunch or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
Yeah, it feels like your life is over. Yeah, I deal with this every time. Every time I make any sort of mistake in an environment where it matters, it's not a healthy mindset, and I'm working to improve on it. But I was raised with a perfectionistic mindset. I was raised with very high standards, and just the mental toll that it takes over time is really something. And it, for a lot of skaters, it takes sort of a pivotal moment where everything gets pushed to a head and they don't want to do it anymore. And they take a step back from skating. And then, you know, a year or two later, they come back, after having done lots of self-reflection and intrinsic growth and realized that they want to skate because they love it. And they only want to do it on their own terms, not on somebody else's terms. Only then are they able to return. But I mean, these children, they certainly are not skating on their own terms, even if they feel like it. They're skating on the government's terms. And it's completely unfair to them.
That's a side effect of state-sponsored sport. In the US, our government does not support the growth and development of figure skating. We have U.S. Figure Skating Association. We have the U.S. It's USOPC. We have organizations that can help, but mostly the costs and everything fall on the parents. And it's very different when your government is paying you to do things. And in some cases, it's funding families.
Yeah.
And so kids don't feel like they have a choice. They skate.
Right.
And any joy and love they have from it, probably, I mean, I'm sure they still enjoy it, but you have to figure at some point it starts to wane because they're doing it for work and not for enrichment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Plus in Russia, in any country where the government funds all the training and the whole sport, the rewards for succeeding are much larger than, you know, in a country like the US, where maybe one or two people become media stars, but everyone else is sort of still just left to stand outside of the spotlight and still has to have, you know, a normal life outside of skating to make ends meet, which, you know, honestly might be a good thing. Because I mean, all my friends, all the skaters that I know and myself now, the moment we take a step away from skating and redirect our priorities elsewhere, it's like taking a thick jacket off, taking a thick jacket and a huge hat and sunglasses all off and stepping into a new world. Like you didn't even realize like things existed, fun existed and, you know, other things were interesting, but I think having different aspects of the self is so enriching and so rewarding in a way that just being an athlete for life can never provide you. And I don't think, you know, I think being an athlete for life isn't a bad thing. If you're good at something and you can make a living out of it, then, you know, by all means. And it's an extremely respectable thing to do. The problem is when you tell kids that their and their families' entire lives and well-being rely on them outdoping their competitors and sort of justifying an all means necessary, anything goes approach, and sort of, you know, telling them that they'll be discarded if they don't do well. That's something else.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's not something that you want to be promoting. It's long term, it's not a good philosophy. It's not a good philosophy from the start.
Right.
But it can only further do damage to the athletes as they get older.
I think skaters in the US, not even elite skaters, I think any committed skater at the US who's, you know, tried to compete at, you know, maybe a regional or sectional or national level and done it for, you know, through high school and done it seriously for long enough, I think any, you know, serious skater in the US is lucky to walk away from the sport with an eating disorder or a mental disorder or some chronic physical injury. Not to mention family conflict and separation and educational sacrifice for really no financial return. And, you know, for many people, no, national title or world title or, you know, Olympic title, just statistically speaking, you know, that how many, what percentage of people win nationals, win worlds, whatever. So just statistics, you know, so
very small percentage. And, and the number that go to the Olympics,
even smaller. Yep.
So that's just in the US, skaters are lucky to walk away with only a one disorder.
Another, yeah. You know?
Now imagine what happens in, you know, in a system like the Russian system, for example. I mean, it's kind of scary to think about.
Where results are the primary focus.
Right. Yep.
Win medal, like you have to achieve. These are the things you have to achieve. The constant, living under the constant expectation of perfection.
I think that, yeah, I think that results being the primary focus can be a good thing and is even necessary at some points in life. But there's got to be a balance, and the bottom line can't be results 100% of the time and only results. When the bottom line is both results and well-being, one can boost the other. And there's almost a synergy between the two. And when you prioritize well-being, you can function better at the rink. And, you know, I think that a holistic approach is really important, especially in a country like the US. And in Russia, it's going to take a lot to change that approach. So I won't speak for them, but having been through, you know, all of these mental and physical well-being struggles so many times over the course of my career, I truly believe that both are necessary to see results. When I was little, I won three national titles in a row and paid the price in surgery at age 12, and paid the price even further in severe depression and being out of the sport for two seasons. I came back and nothing was ever the same again. I'd lost two seasons, and I was never like the star anymore. Then I was playing catch up the rest of my career. And so, you know, you could say on one hand, like, that's great, you won some national titles as a kid, but at what price? Would it have been better to, you know, to sort of temper that a little in favor of more long-term trade-offs. But in Russia, when you can artificially boost the trajectory super early on so that it's not just three national titles you're winning by age 12, but perhaps a junior world title and even a world title if you extend the runway 2 or 3 years, then it maybe the long-term trade-off there doesn't even matter anymore. You don't even have to worry about the years after 15 or 16. So, you know, that I think that's a great, very plausible explanation for that sort of behavior, that what's going on over there.
That is a lot to digest. And it's important for these types of discussions to be happening. Because if you look at it this way, okay, the US and Japan, they got their medals, you know, it will fade away and we can just forget about it happening. But that can't be the case.
No, we kept saying this was the one, this was closing one part of the story. And there's still more to this story that needs to be addressed. So this, just because you guys got your medals doesn't mean this is over. And the things that you're just talking about now and the lessons that we've learned from this, this is what we need to work on now. Yeah, it's not getting you medals. You guys got those. It's taking care of the sport. So this doesn't happen again. That no one is waiting 900 days to get a medal. And that we're having athletes on all playing fields playing fair and clean and everything. So this discussion has been really good, Vincent, hearing all of these things that you're, you know, you're talking about, that maybe a lot of skating fans don't know is going on, is the stuff that now is what we need to be as a skating community addressing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad you guys are saying that. And really glad you guys feel that way. I feel the exact same way. This whole case with the 2022 Olympics doping scandal, this is just a side effect. It's just a symptom. And it's a symptom that happens to be visible, very surface level, very surface level. You can patch up the tiny little spot on your skin. You aren't taking care of the underlying cause, the underlying problems. I've been saying this forever. I feel lucky that we even have a case to be resolved. It's a cherry on top that it was resolved in this way. But me and my team event athletes, we're the lucky ones. We actually had a legal case that was taken care of by due process. Most athletes who end up inadvertently competing with someone else who's doping, you know, be it from Russia or from another country. Like I'm not trying to vilify any one country in particular here. I'm here to vilify anybody who dopes, anybody who cheats. But any athlete who inadvertently ends up competing with someone who is doping, most people don't even get a case. Most people aren't caught, or what happens is just swept under the rug, and there's no grand ceremony to make everyone feel happy in the end, and there's no media coverage. I was just at the Olympics. I was talking to one of the staff members from the USOPC who was an Olympic gymnast herself. And she was a silver medalist who should have been a gold medalist, because the gold medalists, it turned out years later, were underage. Those gold medalists would go about, you know, even talking about it themselves, admitting it themselves that they were underage at the time. I'm sure someone reported it. Nobody ever did anything. No case came out of it. The color of the medal never changed. There's no grand ceremony. 2 years later, they'd be lucky to have one 40 years later. So we're the lucky ones.
I remember reading that there were additional medal ceremonies that were held for athletes that were getting medals 12 years later. 12 years.
Yep. Yep. Somebody from the London Olympics in 2012. And yeah, it's just ridiculous.
Why does it take so long?
Well, why is it even happening? We shouldn't be having medal reallocation ceremonies.
No, we shouldn't. This should be the first and last big reallocation ceremony.
It happens when crooked people prioritize glory over morals.
Yeah.
I know it's tempting when you have the means to make it happen, when the answer key is just at your fingertips, it's tempting to go and look. I'm not saying I don't blame them. I hope they take full accountability. But you can sort of understand that in some countries, the culture is just different. I've had many Russian friends tell me that over there, doping isn't even seen as cheating. They think that everyone else is doing it. Therefore, they can be doing it too.
I have heard this too.
I don't know about other sports. I can tell you from personal experience, no American figure skaters are doping. And I can also tell you that the government has nothing to do with it. You can find cases of American athletes doping, sure. However, the government has nothing to do with it. You can find cases of American athletes doping. A lot of those cases have to do with medications that you can name and medications that you know serve a reasonable purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the report from the 2022 case, that looked like a list of industrial cleaner ingredients that you couldn't pronounce one substance on the list, and there were 60 of them.
Vincent, it read like a chemical list for Breaking Bad, the TV series.
I can count on one hand the number of supplements that I took, and they all began with the word vitamin and ended with a letter.
I hope that I don't see this again. I hope this is the one and only time. But I have to ask you this. Now that you're on the other side of it, was there ever a time that you thought that all hope was lost?
Many times, yeah. Because knowing the history of how these things play out, the odds were definitely not in our favor. And furthermore, even though Russia's been banned from international competition, you can still go and see what their skaters are doing in the competitions in their own country. And it's pretty obvious that they haven't stopped. My sources told me that it's only gotten worse. I'm not surprised. I'm not surprised. I don't think they're going and conducting any serious investigations over there. They're not like, you know, sweeping laboratories countrywide in any way. They're not investigating the coaching team. They're not investigating the actual people responsible. They're focused on the very tips, the tendrils of the roots. They're focused on the very ends of the nerves. They're not going into the heart of the system and finding what's going on. So of course they'd feel safe. Of course they'd feel confident that they can still keep doing this. So given that context, it's very easy to feel like all hope was lost, because I saw them just keep doing it and keep getting away with it, and there kept on being more and more delays, and just seemed like nothing was going to work out. So like I keep saying, I feel extremely lucky, extremely grateful that my team and I had the opportunity to you know, go out in Paris and have the ceremony and receive the medal reallocation in a dignified manner. But I just want to frame for everybody that we are extremely lucky. There's no precedent for anything like this. And there's hundreds, if not thousands, of other athletes who are facing similar situations. Many of them don't even know it. And I just want to, you know, bring awareness to that and, you know, sort of say that, like, I hope that I can, you know, stand for these people and, do what I can to bring some momentum back to our side of the case. So, you know, hopefully I've managed to do that, make a small difference in the outcome of this 2022 case. But there's a lot of other cases that are yet to happen. So
Vincent, now that this piece of the journey is closed, what are you going to do now? Back to school?
Yeah, I have 3 semesters of college left. I'm learning a lot, studying hard, working hard, and it feels really good to have things that matter a lot to me outside of skating. It feels really good for my entire life to not have to be determined by one tiny, you know, slip of the blade. That's not to say that I'm not challenging myself in other ways. I am. And there are other things that, you know, other tiny things that could make a huge difference in the success of my career outside of skating. But it's good to diversify my hand. It's good to explore other areas. So,
well, much like a well-rounded program, having a well-rounded life is equally as important. Mm-hmm. Being able to participate or engage in things that are outside that one primary focus can do a lot to help your mental health as well as your physical health. Mm-hmm. Do you have any other plans for celebrating even more?
Well, my family and I, my girlfriend and her mom, we all were out at Paris and we went and toured a little. But, you know, in classic elite athlete fashion, you know, not much time off and back to the grind after school starts. School starts in 2 weeks and I got to prepare for next summer's work. Already back to it.
And you're bringing the gold medal with you to school, right?
I'm trying. My mom wants to keep it at home where they can damage it.
Maybe there needs to be a replica that you can take to school just in case.
Part of me is wondering if they're going to put a replica in those, your empty metal boxes in the museum in Colorado Springs. Or are they going to...
Oh, there's an idea. There's an idea. Maybe U.S. Figure Skating could work that out with the USOPC to get sort of a display of the whole journey and how that played out.
I think that's
the museum. That's a great idea, actually.
That would be a great visual representation of the process in this. And also in that, even though you might start to lose hope, there are times that it does work out the way that it should. I think that's a lesson to all of us. It's something you can take into your life in your working world, that sometimes it's complicated, but it does work out. Sometimes you just have to stay on it, be positive, continue to fight the good fight in order to get there. Well, we certainly appreciate you coming back on to talk to us, Vincent.
And we get to congratulate you actually virtually in person.
Oh, thank you so much.
We're both very excited for you. You have definitely been one of our favorite guests on the podcast, and it's been wonderful to go through the journey with you from the first time we interviewed you to now and see what the journey's been like. So we're grateful that you were able to take the time to chat with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate your time as well. And this is a great podcast. I'm always happy to come back and talk about whatever you want to talk about.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of This Week in Skating. Remember, you can keep up with us throughout the week by visiting our website at www.thisweekinskating.com. Connect with us on social media for additional updates. You can find us on Twitter at This Week in Skating without the E's, or Facebook, Instagram, and Threads at This Week in Skating. You got a burning question or feedback for Gina, Daphne, or Mateo? Reach out to us via social media or drop us an email at thisweekinskating@gmail.com. And if you're really enjoying the show and want to support us further, consider joining our Patreon community at patreon.com/thisweekinskating. Until next time, have a nice week.
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. In partnership with MGM Northfield Park.